Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, blessed souls, we're alive because we want to stay alive and toward Chaim and structures of life, toward Chesed and structures of kindness, toward Rachmim. This is now the 263rd class of Soul Class. Today's class will be titled Varieties of Being and Super Being, as we're listening to Light in the Darkness from Blessed Brother in Prayer and Good Acts and Learning of Torah, Rav Isaac Baton, who has returned back from the Holy Land following a couple weeks of spiritual endeavors. We're going to turn down the music and welcome back with Rabbi Isaac Baton to Kesakarn Heights, Blessed Souls. And let's just turn it right down. Oh, please excuse me, Rabbi Isaac. Greetings and blessings, Blessed Souls. We hope today, via this semi-impromptu, humble effort, to vibe out on matters of earth, vegetation, animal, and human as it relates to the establishment of a fitting abode for the revelation of divine presence, Shekhinah, upon this blessed planet. I hope you're listening right now, blessed souls, and if not, hopefully you'll catch up to the class in cyberspace. And meanwhile, if you're listening to me live, or you'll listen to the archive version, Bezer Hashem Yisparech, please make it your point to tell at least one person today that they have a divine image, a Tzelem Elohim, which is not a dream. And they can learn more about it from Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 and 27. Now it's become the custom with these semi-impromptu presentations, these humble efforts, as we heartily invite all of the nations of the world to join us as Israel in a statement of unity by learning the Torah portion this week, which is Parshat Truma, which is in the book of Exodus, Sefer Shmot, or Sefer Shmos, chapter 25, verse 1, and concludes at chapter 27, verse 19. And the Haftarah, which will be read, will come from the book of Kings, book 1, chapter 5, verse 26, and conclude at chapter 6, verse 13, which is interesting, 6:13, if you took away the colons, would add up to the number of mitzvahs that we have from the Torah. Without further ado, we want to call attention to the inspiration for this following segment of the show presentation. And this was gleaned from Rev Hillel of Parich, who lived from around 1795 to 1860, a Yoder Chosid, teacher, tzaddik, and mekubal, Kabbalist, who was a chassid of three Lubavitch Rebbe's, all direct descendants of King David and Solomon. From his work, Pelech HaRimon, which unfortunately is not translated into English, and hopefully one day it will be, or certainly at the time of the Universal Redemption, human souls will be able to access this teaching via its original language in the Lashon HaKodesh, in the holy language of Hebrew. So here we go, blessed souls. What can we build in this world, blessed souls? A boat, a railroad line, a basketball arena, a supersonic plane, a wireless connection, a bridge in suspension, a suspension bridge. There is one thing I want to share with you, blessed souls. Anyone who's straight to the Almighty, Yashar, the Kodesh Baruch Hu, the source of all kindness, can build something within his or her lifetime. Are we talking about a building? Are we talking about an edifice? Are we talking about a structure? And if it is one of these matters, a building, an edifice, or structure, where is this building, edifice, or structure to be found? Well, the good news is, blessed souls, this edifice, building, and structure is found within our blessed human hearts. Truth be told, we on our own, as human beings, don't have the means, by our own devices, and how much more so via our own vices, to look inside our hearts clearly, accurately, and even objectively. However, Torah, eternal Torah, Torah Nitzchi, instructs us to make vessels from within and according to our life experiences, inner vessels, kelim panimim, to make within our blessed souls a dwelling place for the Most High Creator, Ein Sof Baruch Hu, a dwelling place within our blessed hearts, a mishkan betoch libenu. True, we must be humbled by the fact whatever we build on our own is not everlasting. Quite mortal are our efforts. And whatever we produce eventually is revealed to be an effort which is quite finite, quite brittle, and even morphable. It can turn into something else aside from what we intended it to be, or it got into the hands of others who either weakened it or destroyed our efforts. Yet, in spite of all this, afal pi kein, yet, when the Torah instructs us in this week's portion, Parshas Truma, how to build vessels with the intent of revealing Elokut, Elokus, divinity, godliness, Shekhinah, divine presence, a question is raised. What is the divine presence, the Shekhinah, blessed souls? And why do we of the nation of Israel concern ourselves with discussing matters of divine revelations, Giloyim Shel Elokut? And who among the Bnei Noach, the blessed Bnei Noach, want to dialogue with us on this matter, which our tradition dictates to us, Medor Lador, generation to generation to generation to generation, and is ultimately connected, this Masorah, this tradition from generation to generation, connected with the imminent revelation of Mashiach, Messiah, Melech, Navi, Varav, King, Prophet, and Teacher. With all the above being stated for blessed souls, if we accept upon ourselves to reconsider the virtues of making a space within our hearts as a sanctuary, as a mishkan, as a migdash to the Most High Creator, we may be able to extract out an instruction from this week's Torah portion, Truma, namely that anything offered towards the construction of a sanctuary, a Migdash, a Mishkan, a tabernacle to the Most High, should involve choice offerings donated with a sense of goodwill and with the intent of pleasing the Most High and pleasing other created human beings. Now, to learn more about this, please go to Sefer Shmos, the book of Exodus, in chapter 25, the beginning of this week's Torah portion, verses 1 and 2, and I humbly and yet affirm my advice to you, I assert my advice to you, please check out Rashi's commentary on this verse. Rabbi Shlomo Yitzhaki, Ben Yitzhaki, is considered to be the primary elucidator of the written and oral Torah traditions on the five books of Moses. Now moving on to a teaching from the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe. Normally we then morph, we head towards the teachings of the current Lubavitcher Rebbe, the seventh Lubavitcher Rebbe, Nachum Mendel Schneerson, but we're going to pluck out from a teaching which I thought is very, very, in a sense, holistic. A teaching gleaned from the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzhak Schneerson, who lived from 1880 until he ascended to the next level of life in 1950. And I'm plucking from a teaching, a Hasidic discourse, a Maimar, which the Rebbe had delivered in Tafresh Tzadik Dalet. That's about 79 years ago. So let's go into that. And let me just find my place here within the teaching itself and confer with my notes and hopefully share something with you. Blessed souls, each one of you with a divine image. Plucking from this Chassidic teaching from the Rebbe Rayatz, there is an activity common to the human life experience which can be brought to our ever-expanding mindset, our consciousness, hakara, sikhli. In particular, we call attention to the faculties of hearing and seeing as we uniquely can experience as human beings. Our eyes and our ears are the blessed vessels by which we can come to understand earthly matters with their heavenly corresponding matters. The potentialities or powers, akoyach or koychos, invested, malubash, within our eyes and ears, can actually join together matter which is separated and divided openly between one form of matter and the other. Yet these separated matters can in fact affect each other via our awareness of separated matter, via our sense of hearing and seeing. We can merit to effectuate a unity, a yuchud, as well as by taking some form of action to improve this world to be more sustainable and more accommodating for the entire human family experience. For example, a person might see a wall or a stone or some drawing that attracts and draws their eye to look it over a second, third, and fourth time, and to the point they coldly stare at it to analyze all the details of that wall, stone, or drawing. Now, according to how the person looks at that wall, stone, or picture, an image is pictured or captured, so to speak, accordingly to that person's unique brain capacities. This captured picture within the person's brain then becomes engraved within his or her memory and is recallable within one's mind to describe it to another person's ears, whose ear of the person receiving that description of that picture, wall or stone, then translate the human speech that they're hearing from the other person describing that stone, wall, or picture. That person hearing that human speech transmits it to their brain and starts to engrave an image/memory of what's being told them. if we reflect back upon gazing upon stone in particularly, truly a prime example of inanimate matter, which outwardly appears to be quite lifeless. So how can it be compared or likened to a human, a stone which seems to be cold and inanimate? A human being speaks, moves, thinks, and it goes without saying, but we will say it again and again and again. And yes, if you had any doubts about this subject, every person ever born or will be born possesses a divine image. So there's really no comparison regarding a stone, which is a being that is still primarily, a still being, and a being is human, who is on the move, is energetic, is ready to spring into action to make this world better. But being the still stone, or the stone being still, is a manifestation of being. And being, who is human, namely we, note that based on the two extremes, the stone, which is one form of being, and a human, which is another type of being, we take note that there are two intermediary levels of being between the two extreme beings, mainly inanimate matter as stone and human being. Namely, the beings we are, human beings, call the intermediary levels of being. One level of being is called vegetative matter. And another form of being, which is an intermediary level between stone and human being, are animal matter, animals. Now, these two intermediary levels have a proximity, physically and spiritually, one to the other, which is much closer in comparison than, say, we were to compare a stone to a human being. First, we point out a concept towards our mind and invite others, all blessed souls, to gaze at, namely that with vegetative matter, the soul force, the energy of plant life, is recognizable much more apparently than the soul of earth, the soul of stone, the soul of mineral, which seems quite inert. To clarify, the corporeal body of plant life does not cover so much overtly the soul of that plant life which is growing. For if plant life is accessing, all it needs to survive will grow and blossom, whichever word suits your fancy, blessed souls, and expands, which testifies to the presence of soul, particularized form of empowerment, meaning something which has soul should be in a state of growth. And we learn that quite openly regarding plant life. We see it grow and expand and become more beautiful. That's the expression of its soul, to grow. Then we have animal life, which is, it has some sort of relation to plant life because it grows like plant life. The baby animal is born, or if it's water life, the fish is spawned, and the fish in the water, or the animal upon the blessed earth that we walk upon ourselves as well, grows and grows and grows. And therefore, the soul of an animal is how much more so more readily observable than even the soul force energy of the plant life. Because we see, not only does an animal grow, it develops certain emotional attributes, which are guided by its own natural, instinctive, intellectual attributes, so the animal can survive in the wild and preserve its species. Of course, all of this is with the blessings of the Most High. Therefore, we can observe that an animal, whether it's in the wild or being trained by a human being to carry out a certain function, like an ox is muzzled to a plow, or a donkey is harnessed to a load, they recognize that they are being harnessed, and according to the way they're trained, will do their job or rebel. But the point is, they have a connection to it because they're being trained by human beings Of course, man was given dominance over all form of life, not to abuse or destroy, but to use it in conjunction with the Most High's plan. Of course, there is permissibility to eat not just mineral life and a vegetative life, but animal and fish life. Of course, it should be done with a type of appetite, which is to strengthen oneself and not just out of hedonistic, coarser pleasure-seeking experiences. With that being said, that there is a proximity to the... I just want to mention one more thing as well. Concerning vegetative life, it has a smell, it has a taste even in certain types of vegetative life. And not only that, the taste and the smell of certain vegetative life can actually be forces for healing and growth and expansion of health of though of whether it be animal or humans who consume this plant matter. So not only do plants grow themselves, they help other forms of life grow. And therefore, since they, just as animals help things grow, like the growing of wheat, so there's a similarity towards vegetative life and animal life, from the fact that their soul forces, their energy levels, are readily observant. If a person has the patience to observe vegetative and animal life, they also help things grow. Now, and animals as well, and water life animals, beings also have emotional and intellectual capacities according to the nature that the Most High has implanted within them. Now, how does this relate to the human family experience, blessed souls? Well, we as observers of these unique qualities to the blessings given, vegetative life and animal life, or water life, should learn from the wisdoms that have been embedded in these two forms of beings which have a proximity to each other. In fact, one of the great sages of Talmudic teachings, Rabbi Yochanan, taught openly that if the Torah would not have been given, human beings could learn good characteristic traits. For instance, we would have learned modesty from how a cat conducts himself or herself, and we would have learned the prohibition of stealing from the way ants are, in fact, that they are very self-sufficient. But if we don't learn from the creation the virtues of vegetative life, the virtues of animal life, and also we can learn out something from inanimate mineral, earth, stone life, dirt life, the life of matter of dirt, whose life force is not so apparent, what we can learn, I would humbly suggest, blessed souls, is that from inanimate matter, we learn about the constancy of accepting one's sense of being. A rock sitting still on top of a mountainside does not seem to extricate itself from its responsibility to be there for whatever divine reason it is, that the rock should be at that part of the creation. It stays what it is. Therefore, we should learn from that as human beings, blessed souls, to stay what we are. That's being human, human beings. And what attributes we should integrate into our existence? Well, that's a matter of personal choice. And sometimes we stumble in our efforts to discover who we really are. And that's why we were given a Torah to help us stumble less. And ultimately, to accomplish more as the rightful stewards of this earth, the entire human family experience. Now, how does this relate to the idea, once we start to meditate on matters of earth, vegetation, animal, and human life, or beings, how does it relate to what we mentioned at the beginning of the program, establishing a dir b'tachtonim, a dwelling place for gila shkinah, upon this blessed planet? Well, in this, we're going to just state very succinctly, very tersely, blessed souls, a teaching from the Lubavitch Rebbe, the son-in-law, the who we consider to be still the present Rebbe of Lubavitch, Rabbi Menachem Schneerson, who was sent to the next level of life almost 19 years ago, in a Shabbos Torah teaching, a Hasidic Maimar from Parshas Truma, Vav Adar, which be this coming Shabbos, it will be a completion of 30 years since he initially had taught this teaching. And I'm just plucking out, because we want to make an exit pretty soon, because some of us have to go to work. And I've been multitasking a little bit with my HS Chal, Maras Sima Simcha, being in Eretz HaKodesh, the Holy Land, and me getting my full experience as being Mr. Mom to all of our children since this Sunday. But with that being said, the Rebbe brings out that, can you imagine this, blessed souls, that we were created as human beings to understand, we were given a divine instruction by the Most High, as was given to Moshe at the beginning of this week's Torah portion, chapter 25, verse 8, Va'asili migdash ushchanti besochem, they should make for me a place which is sanctified, known as a migdash, a holy house, and I will dwell among them. Now, the very fact that we were told that we should make something for the Most High is a teaching that the Rebbe took many times. When we're told something, what we should do, the Most High would not have commanded us to do something if he didn't give us already the power to do it. So we are here in this blessed world, blessed souls. As we mentioned at the beginning of this humble effort today, Rebbe Hillel Meir Parch, with Torah instruction, we can make that sanctuary within our own selves, in our blessed heart, from our life experiences. And right now we're experiencing life. And to realize that this is an eternal commandment, not just for the nation of Israel, to make that particular place called the Migdash, the Beis HaMikdash, the Holy Temple, which there was a first temple and a second temple, and they were destroyed. It's incredible as it may be, that you might think that you do something that the Most High tells you to do, and you did it, and you did it well, it just stands forever. Well, what the Most High said to do does stand forever, but if we as human beings undermine what we have previously accomplished, or others come after us, or the next generation undermine what we've accomplished, things can get destroyed. However, the essential commandment to make a sanctuary for the Most High is still in its ultimate strength and will be even after the coming of the Mashiach. Now, the question might be raised, what would have been, or what has been, or what will even be the Chiddush? What will be the novelty of building a third temple under the aegis of Mashiach, and only under the aegis of Mashiach? For the inducing of the Hashras HaShechinah, the indwelling of the Divine Presence. Because after all, we have a prophecy in Navi Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah the prophet, chapter 23, verse 24, Et ha-shamayim v'sa'aretz ani melei, that the heaven and earth I fill. The Most High instructed the prophet to tell us, as the Most High's speaker system, meaning the prophet, Jeremiah, Yirmiyahu and Navi. That is to say that the Most High's divinity, Elokusa Yisbarek, Nimsa Bakom Makom. There's no place that's devoid of divine presence. Whether it be gradations, Bechinas of Elokus, Mamalika Amin, Elokus that fills all the worlds according to how the world has made itself a vessel for this Elokus, or Savivika Amin, there's still an encompassing level beyond that which we as human beings can make as vessels for the indwelling, the Hashrat HaShchinan, the indwelling of divine presence. So what would be the novelty of building something to induce, to mamshich, to elicit the Shekhinah? And if we were to say that the elicitation of Elokus needs to be through the actions of man, it should be understood that, you know, why why were, in fact, we commanded to make him a Mikdash, which would seem to be a particular commandment, although we've detracted from that type of reasoning, because everyone does have to make their own personal sanctuary within themselves, within their human heart. But we want to clarify, as there is a teaching in the Tanya, which is a teaching from the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, in the beginning of chapter 41, which mentions that the novelty of the Beis HaMikdash, the physical Beis HaMikdash, which really started with the tabernacle in the Sinai Desert for 40 years when Moshe led the Israelites and led to various tabernacles in the land of Israel and eventually the first and second temple, and then hopefully speeding our days, becoming a Mashiach Tzidkenu, that there should be a indwelling of Shekhinah in a specific place, just like there's a specific soul that encloses itself in a specific body, like your specific soul, blessed soul, being enclosed in your specific body to energize you to live your specific life. So again, what we might ask, why should we do all this? Well, you were specifically created to become aware of the fact, not only on the general level should there be a temple, a Beit HaMikdash, in this blessed world in a revealed way, but you yourself should be sanctified within a space in your heart or a space in your mind, that there should be the proper indwelling of all the capacities of your soul powers, koichos and nefesh, that you can reveal this consciousness into the world, whether you're a B'nai Yisrael, one of the children of Israel, or B'nai Noach. Just as everyone accepts the idea, I think so, I know so, for myself, that if I don't get that specific amount of energy being transmitted, we say soul power, neshama, b'moach, the soul in the brain, how can my brain work to delegate energy to go out to the rest of my body according to the voluntary and involuntary functions of the human brain, or the amount of godliness, elokus, that has to be transmitted through and from within and outwardly from my heart, in order that my heart should work as that wondrous pump, which after 30 years, I think it's 30 plus years or so, after 30 plus years of a heart beating at, say, like 70 beats a minute, a person has had 1 billion heartbeats of energy, soulful energy, that allows them to pump the blood all around the body. And we know it's in the blood, blessed souls, because the Torah testifies about it. That's where your soul is. And this interacts with your heart. So there's specific places in your body, because we can't ask the heart to be your toenail. We can't ask your brain to be your nose. And we can't ask your ear to be your brain, and we can't ask your elbow to be your heart. No. So the instruction to learn on today, Buses, as we close out, is that as we look at all the specific aspects of this creation, earth, vegetation, animal, and human, this relates to making that dera b'tachtonim, that we are commanded as human beings and being asked to and empowered by the Most High to do so. Because just look at the way you are constructed, blessed souls. Excuse me. Your brain has a specific function, and your heart has a specific function, and your elbow and your big toe on your foot a specific function. We don't ask the big toe to be the heart. We don't ask the elbow to be the brain. The brain is the brain, and the elbow is the elbow. The heart is the heart, and the big toe is the big toe. So this is how, by becoming aware of the specifics, of the profundity of the way the Most High created this creation, as we look into the four elements of life on this planet or existence, we are empowered to want to learn more about all of these matters, and hopefully as it relates to Torah's Chassidus, as it relates to the 613 commandments, if we're one of the children of Bnei Noach, the Gentile nations, Kol Mishpachat Adama, the human family experience, all the families of the earth, we become more energized and aroused and inspired to make it a better world. There's tons of women wishing everyone a wonderful day. We're going to end off with music from David Dohm, blessed brother from England, who's going to play a song that I can never get tired of hearing. It's called Travis Song, a Noahide prayer. So bless us, just remember, with music like this from David Dohm, with music like this from David Dohm, Travis's song, a prayer is Noahide's prayer, which you can access by going to www.musicray.com. And then type in David Dohm, and then you'll see a smorgasbord of music, and help out the men. Maybe buy a song or two and share it with others on the internet. Cyberspace, a place for the human race to express time, soul, and space in a proper and hopefully peaceful and pleasant way. So we're going to end off now with the Hav Echad, one love, Goral Echad, one destiny kulanu for all of us, Badarchi Shalom, in a peaceful Darchi Noam, in a pleasant way. Hamshich to be continued, Be'ez Hashem Yisparech, with the blessings of the Most High. And also want to remind everyone, hopefully 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, Eastern Standard Time, here in Turtle Island, which is also known as USA, and 4 o'clock in Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh tomorrow, which would be February 14th, and also in California, which will start at 6 a.m. Perhaps some of my friends out in California are waking up to smell the coffee, or getting up to think about making the coffee, or maybe having some spirulina juice, whatever you want to say. Everyone, hope you'll tune in tomorrow as we get to the heart of the matter with International Human Rights Rabbi Dr. Eliezer Goldstock, as he talks about this month is Adar. This is the month of joy. Joy is more than just a detergent to clean your dishes and pots and pans. It's a way of life. The Torah sanctions it, approves it. The Most High wants us all to live in joy. Let's all live in joy with the conclusion of the show with Travis' song, A Noahide's Prayer by David Dohm. Take care, everyone. Follow the ending of my soul. Returning.